It is about 10:42, so we will call the meeting of the Finance Audit Compliance Facilities and Operations Committee to order. Ms. Doe, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Present.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Here.
Trustee John Butler?
Here.
Trustee Eric Wazowitz?
Here.
Trustee James Innes?
Here.
Board Chair Montel Gales?
Here.
Committee Vice Chair Leland Strom?
Here.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima?
Here. Thank you very much. Mr. Perry, could you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You have a quorum present. An appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number three, is there a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So moved,
Wazowitz.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
Thank you, Trustee Strom. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The meeting agenda is approved. Next, we're going to move to the review and approval of the minutes from the meeting of May 8th of 2025. Is there a motion to approve? Thank you very much. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes of May 8th, 2025 are approved. We will now move to item number five, the chair's comments. But before I make my comments, I would like to welcome in any members of the University Advisory Committee who are present today. Does anybody have any comments for the board?
No, we do not.
Okay. But thank you for being here. So my comments this morning are going to run a little longer than normal. So if you've got some popcorn, sit back and relax. And thank you for your patience. As the other chairs of our other committees have said, it's great to be back on campus with our students who are out on our sidewalks, our faculty and staff who are in the classrooms, and just the beauty of our campus. The campus looks amazing. Nice weather and sunshine helps. But it does remind us of why we're all here. So welcome back to all, and let's have a great year. Before we dive into today's agenda items, which include some audit and financial updates, along with five recommendations, and a short presentation on capital projects, the board, would like to take a moment to address with our NIU family the ongoing conversation focused on fiscal sustainability of higher ed and specifically NIU. As Dr. Freeman mentioned in her recent message to our campus, the volume of universities across the country, whether public or private, now confronting financial challenges is at a level that we have not seen in decades. And the challenge that our Washington administration further complicates matters across the industry of higher ed. For example, our own peer institution of Kent State, their board back in March made a vote to approve what they call Transformation 2028, which is a plan to address a budget deficit of about $26 million. They voted to merge out of their campus about 30 positions that were senior positions. They chose to delete nine majors, and they merged several of their deans together. In that same vein, we've been responding to the deficit that we have. We recognize that our leadership, the finance team, and the entire campus responded to the board's mandate to present a balanced budget for FY26. That balanced budget was indeed presented and approved in June, But the work to achieve this budget must continue throughout the year. The board and I are committed to holding the university accountable for not only planning a balanced budget, but achieving it as well. We recognize the sacrifices being made, but we also see and appreciate the creative thinking being exercised in ways to save funds, to increase the revenues, to enhance and reallocate resources to areas of opportunity, to name a few examples. There are restructuring ideas that will be permanent, being brought to life by way of right-sizing and restructuring our programs, changing the way we do business, and engaging with partners like Train. We have chosen to discontinue positions through what we call rigorous position control, up to and including senior level positions on our campus. The decrease in our campus footprint through the sale of facilities like Laredo Taft and Hoffman Estates, and the repurposing of spaces such as our HR building and Loudoun Hall to reduce our footprint and increase our efficiency. These actions are responsive to our enrollment, commitment to sustainability, and rising deferred maintenance costs. The same is true of our efforts to schedule classrooms from a central standpoint. This practice allows us to lower our costs and increase our academic efficiency without having a negative impact on our student experience, because we are able to deploy and maintain sophisticated technology in a smaller number of classrooms. We are responding to collective bargaining agreements and increased wages, and they remain a focus of HR through aligning our salaries to market within the boundaries of our financial capacity. Another great example is the launch of Husky Frontiers, an effort to identify non-federal funding sources for research. And lastly, I want to acknowledge the work that's happening to further cement our position as a student-centered institution that is fully committed to the success of every student and the investment to grow the adult learner audience and strategically incorporate housing opportunities into scholarship and academic planning. These efforts allow us to honor our core values and continue to serve students in a way that is needed for them to succeed, while at the same time to move NIU to fiscal sustainability. We appreciate the sacrifices that you have made. We recognize the sacrifices that are yet to come. And we deeply appreciate the hard work that everyone across our campus is doing to allow students to continue to succeed and prosper. Together, we will get through this, and your board is here to help with and support Dr. Freeman and her team. And most of all, we just want to say thank you to everyone on this campus for getting us to a balanced budget for FY26. And now is the hard task of attaining the balanced budget for fiscal year 26. So thank you to you all. And at this point in time, I would like to turn it over to our Chief Financial Officer, Dr. George Mittelmus, for some further comment.
Thank you, Committee Chair Barsema. The financial stability of NIU is imperative, and the leadership team has been working collaboratively and with their respective divisions to address the fiscal challenges in ways that are strategic, sustainable, and centered on supporting student success. Changing the ways we operate to identify efficiencies and direct resources to where they can be most impactful is difficult work. As an example, my division has been reimagining the services we provide, how we use technology, where restructuring will strengthen our outcomes, as well as identifying which positions that were at one time called for are no longer needed to move forward. We understand that we can't do everything we want to do, but we are clear on what we need to do. NIU's leaders continue to impress upon our teams that change is critical, regardless of how large or small, that our resources need to be leveraged for the greatest impact, and that each employee plays a role in achieving the university's goals. Key to success is accountability. I say with confidence that leadership is committed to holding all units accountable as we work through finalizing fiscal year 25, transition into fiscal year 26, and begin planning for fiscal year 27. No pressure. Our budget team is working diligently to track budget performance, assist departments with questions and opportunities for creating efficiencies throughout this year and as they develop fiscal year 27 budgets. And we're analyzing data each week to help divisions with stay on track and look ahead. As CFO, I will be meeting with each division quarterly to go over their unit's budget performance and to help with remedying situations early on if a deficit is projected. I am also available and eager to assist units in fiscal year 27 budget planning, as is the entire budget team. I want to thank my team for the work we have done to improve our financial processes, and I want to thank shared governance and employees across all divisions and colleges for their commitment to achieving and implementing an academically responsive and fiscally responsible balanced budget for fiscal year 26. Together, we make a difference for NIU and ensure a strong future. And I turn the floor back over to Dennis.
Thank you very much.
I'm just George.
Thank you, George. Okay, at this point in time, we will move to public comment. We wish to recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, once again, we have Mr. Tim Burns, and I do not believe that they are present. That's the only public comment we have registered.
Okay. We will move on. Item number 7, financial update. I would, again, like to go back and ask George to present the financial update for the university.
Agenda item 7A is the fiscal year 2024 audit and financial results. To put it into perspective, we're in fiscal year 26. We've just finished fiscal year 25, so these audit results are over a year old. The fiscal year 2024 financial audit and financial results provides a high-level summary of the university's financial statements and audit results. The auditors provided an unmodified audit opinion, meaning that the financial statements comply with accounting standards and that are accurately stated. Two exceptions were noted in the financial audit. These findings were administrative in nature only, with no indication of fraud or mismanagement of university resources. Corrective actions related to these findings have been implemented as noted in Agenda Item 7B, which we'll be discussing next. For the financial results, net position decreased nearly $18 million in fiscal year 24. The university's net position is expected to further decline in fiscal year 25 and begin stabilizing in fiscal year 26 as a result of the deficit mitigation plans for fiscal year 26 and going forward. The university's working capital ratio fell to 0.68, which is below the target working capital ratio of 1.2 to 2.0. The university's net position is expected to begin slightly stabilizing in fiscal year 25 as a result of the university's deficit mitigation plan. We expect to see a small improvement in FY25 in our working capital as we reduce spending in some areas and continued improvement in fiscal year 26 and 27 as we meet the mandate from the board, Higher Learning Commission, and bond insurance requirements to have a balanced budget and to begin to rebuild our cash balances. Lastly, the university's long-term debt payable decreased $11.3 million due to repayment of principal.
Thank you, George. Item 7A and 7B kind of flow into each other, so I'll ask the board to hold any questions until after we talk about item 7B.
Agenda item 7B is the fiscal year 2024 external audit corrective action plans update. The university's FY24 audit was completed in May 26, 2025. There were 15 audit findings reported, of which 9 were repeated from the prior year. There were 6 new findings this year, and 8 from the prior year findings were implemented and not repeated. All findings are administrative in nature only, with no evidence of fraud or resource mismanagement. The university takes all findings seriously, and we are working to address all findings in a timely manner. The enclosed chart contains a listing of all findings, the actions the university is taking to address the finding, the status of those recommendations, the responsible areas, and the probability that the finding will repeat next audit cycle. It's important to note that repeat findings do not indicate chronic problems. Many findings may repeat for a year or two due to the timing and duration of the audit cycle. The university's commitment to eliminating findings is demonstrated by the fact that 8 findings from the prior year audit did not repeat in the current year.
Thank you, George. I'll open it up to questions from the board right now, but I'll make a couple of comments first. George and I and Lee have a great depth of discussion about the audit, and I appreciate the fact that we're going in the right direction. So that's good. This is very important to both Lee and I as chair and vice chair, but to the entire board. And so we're going in the right direction, but we need to continue to make progress. And I look forward to us doing this at a bit of a faster pace as we move forward. I do encourage you all to look at the chart that is in the package, because I think we have gotten the chart to a good, I'm not sure what page it's on, page 8. We have gotten the chart to a good flow where I think you can understand, what the description of the finding is, who is responsible for it in terms of correcting it, and whether we think it's going to repeat itself or not. So I do encourage you to look at that chart on page number 8. But with that, I would open it up to any questions from the board members for George.
I don't have a question per se, but I do want to say thank you for the hard work, right? And I'm not just directing that to you, George. I'm directing that, of course, to our president and the staff and the rest of the campus that has worked together collectively to get us where we are today. We are not out of the woods yet. I understand that. But I do want to be at least express some appreciation for the work that the campus has done as a whole to get us where we are.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? Lee?
Chair Basima, I just will want to echo a little bit your opening statements and comments as a member of the, as the vice chair of the FAFCO committee, and the difficult decisions that are having to be made. We realize there's a lot of pain being exhibited across the university in a number of these areas that where cuts are being made. It does not go unnoticed. And the challenges, and Dennis, in your comments, you used the term right size, is been in the back of my mind since I joined the Board of Trustees now almost 2 years ago, is are we in the process of right sizing the university for the enrollment numbers that we are at now? And what does the future hold? Because there's a bit of catch-22 in this. As we saw in the opening numbers this morning on the faculty, a net drop of 10 faculty, tenured faculty at the university this year. That's part of the right sizing as we see it. From a number standpoint, we always have to extrapolate these moves into how we balance this budget. And that will continue to be a focus, again, of the committee, of the Board of Trustees. But I want to just reiterate that we fully understand the difficult and challenging and sometimes painful decisions that are having to be made in this process.
Yeah, no, thank you. As most of the members of this board, if not all members of this board, maybe with the exception of our student trustee, we've all been in positions of running a company or a department or whatever it might be. And I can tell you that having been a part of companies before, I was a part of AT&T when AT&T went through their divestiture and the changes that they had to make, the companies that I've ran, we've had to make changes. Change is hard. It doesn't always happen fast because you're typically trying to change behaviors. You're trying to change infrastructure that has existed for decades. Yeah, and you're trying to change it in a very short period of time. And that's a very difficult thing to do because you're trying to, you're just trying to change the behaviors, and you're trying to change the infrastructure that's just something that we've known forever. And it's not just because of Washington. You know, we can't lay all of, the blame for everything that's happening at the foot of Washington. We recognize as a campus, we saw this coming a few years ago, well before the current administration. And so, to Lee's point, I think we have to recognize, and the board does, the tremendous effort that Dr. Freeman and her team and everybody on our campus has given to change management, to change. And the fact, I've said this before, so I don't want to sound like a broken record, but the fact that this campus and this administration recognized, several years ago the need for change, put us out ahead of a number of our peer institutions and other institutions across the country. As I mentioned, Kent State, and this is public information. I'm not reciting anything that you can't go read on the internet. Their board approved in March, Transformation 2028. That's a few years from now, right? Of when they want to make these changes. So. We recognize that change is difficult, but we also recognize the fact that we, as an administration and as a university, got out ahead of it, and for that we're very thankful. And as Lee said, we applaud, the effort of everybody across the campus, because this is hard stuff, no doubt about it. So, John?
So, I hear what's being said. I just want to offer my perspective that the notion of right sizing is a fiscally responsible action on the part of the institution. And it is being done in to drive an agenda of fiscal sustainability, but it's not the institution's overall strategy. And I think it's important to make that distinction here. The strategy is available. It's contained in the university goals. And it's, using my language, it's a strategy that's heavily focused on product in the sense of what does the university offer, and is it an innovative and attractive curriculum that is tied to the region and to the industries of the region, as well as the other goals that have been better articulated with respect to those curricular goals than I'm capable of doing here right now. But the strategy is also a contemporary marketing process whereby we reach students where they're at in language that makes sense to them and attract them to the institution. Right sizing is a matter of fiscal responsibility and good management of the institution. The strategy of the institution is a much broader conversation, and I just think it's important to keep that in mind.
Good point. Other comments? Are we good? Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to agenda item 7C.
Agenda item 7C is the annual report of cash and investments for the period ending June 30, 2025. The annual report contains three reports: the report of depositories, the cash and investments holding summary, and the investment earnings report. The report of depositories is submitted annually, while cash and investments holding summary and investment earnings reports are submitted quarterly. The report of depository summarizes the university's balances and bank activity for the year by financial institution. The cash and investments holding summary is similar, but summarizes the university's holdings by holding type. The cash and investment holding summary at June 30 shows NIU's total holdings at just under $98 million. Of the total holdings balance, approximately $10 million is available for daily operations, providing approximately 8 days of cash on hand. Although the total holdings balance increased by $20 million from the balance at June 30, 2024, approximately $41 million of the total holdings balance is attributable to the tax-exempt financing for the train energy efficiency improvements. Exclusive of this tax-exempt financing, the total holdings decreased by $21 million from the balance of June 30, 2024. The university continues to work to curtail the declining cash flow trend with proactive planning and implementation of a balanced budget for fiscal year 26. The investment earnings report shows income of $1.3 million and an overall annualized rate of return of approximately 4.3% for the fourth quarter. This represents an increase in interest earned of approximately $68,000 when compared to the same quarter of fiscal year 24. The increase in interest earned is primarily due to the increase in total cash and investment holding balances as a result of the influx of restricted cash held for the train energy improvement project. I think it is important to remind our community that this is why it is so essential to eliminate our deficit and begin to rebuild our financial foundation. Improving our cash position is not only important, it is the path to fiscal sustainability.
Thank you. I have a few comments to make, and then I'll open it up to the board for comment or questions. So I mentioned before that, you know, George and myself and Lee and the rest of the finance committee, Dr. Freeman, we talk a lot about the audit results. We probably talk more about cash than we do audit. This is one of the primary reasons why getting to a balanced budget was important for us, is important for us, that we achieve a balanced budget. Because as we achieve a balanced budget, in theory, right, and in practice, we will be having more money come in than we have going out. And as we have more money coming in than we have going out, we will begin to build back up the cash reserves, which is absolutely critical for us to do. So when you think about, you know, why is a balanced budget so important to us? Right? Cash is everything. We need cash in order to run. And so it's important to us that that we build this back up because we are critical to our students, to our community, to Chicago, to the state of Illinois, to this country, to this world. I mean, you look at the things that we're doing across our campus from a research standpoint, right? It's not just impacting our campus community. It's not just impacting DeKalb. It's not just impacting Chicago or Illinois. We're impacting the world. So it's important that from a sustainability standpoint, that we not only have a budget that's balanced, but we begin to grow cash. So this is something that the board watches very closely. We will continue to watch very closely to ensure that we're building our cash reserves back up so that no matter what comes to us in the future, and something else will come, whether it's another pandemic, whether it's something, you know, from Washington, whatever it might be. Remember, for those of you that were back here in, you know, the middle part of the last decade, we had an impasse on our state budget for several years, right? We don't know what the future is going to bring in terms of headwinds, so we have to be prepared for it. We have to be prepared for anything. And building our cash balance back up ensures that no matter what headwinds come at us, we will be okay. So with that, I'll open it up to the board. Any questions?
Just a comment to add on to that. When we were sitting in our meetings and discussing all of this, the question came up was, when was the last time we had a balanced budget? And we kind of went back to, I think, 15 years or more on that. And it's, you know, we've got some fiscal responsibility going now. In fact, when I first joined the board, which is about 7 or 8 years ago now, we didn't even have a budget. And I remember being pretty surprised about that. So, and that's due to past administrations, past things we're dealing with today. And we're doing all the right things, we think. And it's something that, you know, just needs to be done, because we don't have, cash is king, and if we don't have cash, we're not here. So it's flat out what it is, and we're doing everything that we need to do, and there's going to be more to be done. So, Dennis, you used the word sustainability quite a bit, and I think that's now where we've achieved what we have. Now we need to sustain and move forward, and that should be the rallying cry. So I echo everything you say.
Other questions, comments? Last comment that I'll make, I've said in a lot of boardrooms where the board and the management team were not aligned with the priorities of the university or of the company in that particular case. I can assure you that the board and Dr. Freeman and her team, we are aligned in terms of where the priorities are for the university. And it is a pleasure to serve with this team. So thank you. Okay, with that, let's move.
I was just going to echo that.
I'm sorry.
And say it's wonderful to have a board that cares as much about the university and its mission as this board does, and that shows that love through being willing to have difficult conversations about accountability, and we very much appreciate you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number 8. George, agenda item 8A.
Agenda item 8A is the bowl game participation expenses. The university is requesting that the Board of Trustees delegate to the president or designee approval for all necessary and proper expenses related to the NIU's participation in a postseason bowl game competition. The university is unsure of the bowl scenario at this point in the season, but should the team qualify and the university chooses to participate, there is a quick turnaround required for logistics. The items include, but are not limited to, the following: the bowl agreements, expenses relating to ticketing, tickets, travel, transportation, lodging, rentals, insurance, dining, beverages, non-alcoholic, fees, services, broadcast rights, apparel, commodities, and the list goes on. Further, such approval is requested to authorize the president or designee to undertake all business transactions necessary in relation to an anticipated upcoming bowl event, reporting actions taken where required beyond customary authorizations at a subsequent meeting of the board.
Thank you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the president forward it by means of the president's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 25th, 2025.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8A?
So moved, Wozniewicz.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Strom.
Any discussion?
Just win, baby.
Just win.
Yes, Rita? Excuse me, I have one quick question, and I know we discussed this. This doesn't obligate us to participate if we decide we don't want to.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
Further questions?
Eric? I mean, maybe just to clarify that a little bit, we have to put this out front because we don't know what's going to happen. And with all the talk about fiscal responsibility and sustainability, we're not going to do something where it's going to take us deep in the hole on something. It's just, this board is not doing that. So, but we do have to plan. I get that.
I see John here, but I would ask Dr. Freeman, and if you want to delegate this answer, that's great, or that's fine. But what's the benefit to NIU of going to a bowl game?
You know, it's a way for our student athletes to celebrate their accomplishments through the season. and to highlight their accomplishments, not only in competition, but also in the community and academically. Our football team is always ranked higher academically than it is in terms of performance, even in their best season. And highlights of things like a commencement ceremony for our football players at a bowl game, especially echoing Coach Hammack's philosophy of having a developmental attitude and taking great pride in developing young men to be leaders in something other than sports. Sticking with a more traditional model, it gives us a lot of opportunity to advance the university's brand. The amount of earned media from a bowl game is tremendous. I think we talked last year about the millions of dollars of earned media that we got out of the Notre Dame victory and how that trend continued. It's a lot of visibility for the university. And so those things are very positive. It's also a place for us to entertain donors and prospective donors from around the country. And we have many of people who left this institution a long time ago who love the institution, but whose biggest connection to the institution is around tailgating, football, bowl game, opportunity. That said, I think the language is quite clear. You're delegating authority to the president or designee to make a decision that's in the best interest of the university, and that will be done based on the conditions at the time, what bowl it is, what the expenses are, what the opportunity for earned media and donor engagement is, and it will be done with transparency so the university understands why we're making the decision, transparency in the reasoning for the decision that's made at the time. Does that help? Or?
Yeah, no, I was hoping you were going to mention, I know, that is foremost on your mind, the brand recognition piece. So I was in the Reno area here in the last week, and I did play a little golf. And I have an NIU golf bag, and I got no less than a half a dozen. I was there one day, and I got no less than six folks who came up to me and said, hey, we're really anxious for you guys to be, in the Mountain West next year and to play you at, Reno. And so, I mean, we're getting branding in a part of the country where we've never forgotten branding before. And that is important to our success. It's important that people recognize who and what NIU is, not just here in the Northern Illinois region, but across our country. So, yeah.
I want to give another shout out. Coach Hammack's nickname now is Viral Coach Hammack.
Viral
because
Coach.
He has been such a social media star. And I can say that I take great pride in the fact, there are coaches who become social media stars for reasons that their presidents don't relish, and that is not the case here. Bursting into tears with celebration for the young men on the team at Notre Dame, talking at his press conference about how we will maintain the core values of this university in the face of drastic change to the athletics landscape, that's real, and that speaks to who we are in a way that people who don't know all the other great things that we do can see, and it's tangible, and we're very, very fortunate to have a coach who represents us so well.
Although he did hurt me deeply when he had to refer to Pat Murphy of the Milwaukee Brewers as a role model that he wants to emulate. Did he meet with Murphy when the Brewers were in town?
He did, but you'll be happy to know he met with Craig Counsell too.
Thank you. You had to add that. Lee.
I just tried one quick question, and I can't remember off the top of my head. What was the net financial impact of the famous Potato Bowl last year? Do we know?
Do we have those numbers finalized yet?
I don't honestly know the answer to that question. We
okay.
can find that out.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions or comments? Okay, we've had a motion to approve. We've had a second. We've had discussion. All those in favor of agenda item 8A, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda item 8A is approved. Agenda item 8B.
Agenda item 8B is bulk purchasing with Dell Technologies. The Division of Information Technology, DOIT, requests permission to spend up to $1.7 million on device refresh purchases for the university from Dell Technologies as a part of a bulk purchasing program. Through negotiations with multiple vendors, the university secured favorable pricing with a realized savings of over 20% per device compared to the current individual unit quote, demonstrating the significant financial benefit of this approach. The total cost of an initial summer 2025 purchase of 500 devices from Dell Technologies was $466,000. The university intends to order up to an additional $1.2 million in equipment before the end of fiscal year 26. Using a bulk purchasing framework supports the university's drive forward towards efficiency and cost savings. Instead of individual units procuring laptops and desktops on an ad hoc basis, DOIT will consolidate these purchased into scheduled multiple bulk orders throughout the year. DOIT will engage and partner with campus stakeholders to assess the needs and priorities. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 25th, 2025.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8B?
So made, Strum.
Second, Gales.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion or comment? Yeah. Trustee Gales?
Chair Gales. I see that we're at least buying 500 devices. I'm assuming that we're going to be replacing devices, so bringing the new devices. The end of life on that, when the device is end of life, do we give those away to a foundation? What happens with those devices?
Thank you for the question, Trustee Gales. So it would depend on the age of the device. A number of these devices are simply old and can't be upgraded to the next iteration of operating system, Windows 11. And so some of those that can't be, we would just surplus with the state and take them off our books. Okay. Those that can, we're always looking for opportunities to share across campus. And in particular, Dean Barnhart in the library has a student facing a laptop loaner program that we would look to feed or seed that program and refresh his infrastructure there with anything we can replace out there. But our first couple phases of this project are clearly going to be about modernizing away from very old equipment on campus, and so most of those are just going to be surplused away from our inventory.
I'll be honest, I couldn't help but tie the other presentation that we saw together with the elderly to see if these devices that are being end of life that we no longer have any use for, if we could give those devices to groups like the elderly.
We're open to any outcome relative to those devices. I'd say our biggest challenge is going to be there is navigating that path with devices that are simply so old. You can't take a current upgrade on the operating system, and so you really want to limit their exposure out there with the general community, just for security purposes, among a whole bunch of other reasons, yeah.
And the only other thing I'd add is that the state requires kind of how we dispose of not just computers but assets, right? And so we have to go through that process as well.
Important.
It doesn't
point.
Always allow for us to give assets to good causes, if that makes sense.
That's actually one of the findings, I think, on the audit report. I was just going back to try to find it in terms of how we manage our assets.
It's other a questions, frequent
comments?
Challenge. Yeah.
Okay. Hearing none, we've had a motion, we've had a second, we've had discussion. All those in favor of agenda item 8B, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Agenda item 8B is passed. Agenda item 8C.
Agenda item 8C is the Cisco multi-year enterprise maintenance contract. DOIT requests permission to purchase a multi-year enterprise Cisco maintenance contract for hardware, software, and 24/7 technical support for fiscal year 26 through fiscal year 30, not to exceed $2.5 million during this five-year period. The maintenance agreement supports the entire campus-based network equipment infrastructure to assist DOIT in troubleshooting, break-fix repairs, and replacement of hardware in case of failure. Historically, DOIT has secured maintenance and licensing support through annual agreements with additional expenses incurred throughout the year as new equipment was installed. Annual costs have ranged from $404,000 in fiscal year 23 to $490,000 in fiscal year 25. A five-year enterprise agreement would lock a price in a price for fiscal year 26 of $446,000. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 25th, 2025.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8C?
So move, Wasowitz.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. Is there any discussion or comment? Okay. Oh, Chair Gales.
Relative to the Cisco equipment, are we an all Cisco shop?
100%, yes, on our enterprise network. So that would be all wired connectivity, all of our routers for internet service to campus, and all of our 3,300 plus wireless access points across campus, all Cisco.
Further questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 8C say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda item 8C is passed. Agenda item 8D.
Agenda item 8D is renewal of Adobe licensing contract. In alignment with university leadership's strategic directives to drive efficiencies and reduce costs in information technology, DOIT is reviewing campus application needs and renegotiating vendor agreements where appropriate to secure more favorable terms. Although the university is currently in the final year of a three-year Adobe contract, DOIT collaborated with Academic Affairs and the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning to evaluate and refine the institution's application portfolio to better meet the evolving needs of students, faculty, and staff. As a result of this effort, DOIT successfully renegotiated the Adobe agreement, securing a cost reduction of $43,000 in fiscal year 26 and $28,000 per year the remaining years of the contract compared to an annual cost in the current contract. The new agreement will take effect October 1st, 2025 and will run for 9 months in the first year, realigning the contract to end with NIU's fiscal year end. The cost of the negotiated contract is $177,000 for the first 9 months and $236,000 per year in the remaining 3 years of agreement for a total of $885,000 over the course of the agreement. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 25th, 2025.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8D?
So moved, Herrero.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Gales.
Thank you. Is there any discussion or comment? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of agenda item 8D say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda item 8D is passed. Our last action item, agenda 8E.
Agenda item 8E is the digital storefront printing and direct mail services. The university's current printing and direct mail services contract has expired, which presents a strategic opportunity to optimize our vendor relationships and service delivery model. Organizational oversight of this contract has transitioned from the Division of Information Technology to the Division of Enrollment Management, Marketing, and Communications, and provides an opportunity to restructure our approach to better serve university-wide printing and mailing needs. This approach provides operational flexibility, cost competition, and risk mitigation while maintaining service quality standards. EMMC requests permission to enter into agreements with up to three digital storefront printing and direct mail service providers. Multiple vendors are required to ensure that the availability of specialized expertise and competitive pricing to accommodate the diverse nature of the university's printing and mailing needs. Each contract will be for an initial three-year term from July 1, 2026 through June 30, 2029, not to exceed $300,000 per year or $900,000 in the aggregate. Under this authority, specific transactions will be processed in accordance with the Illinois Procurement Code and internal approval procedures. The university recommends that the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee endorse this request and ask that the President forward it by means of the President's report to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on September 25th, 2025.
Thank you, George. Is there a motion to approve agenda item 8E?
So made, Strum.
Thank you, Trustee Strom. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you very much. Is there any comment or discussion? Chair Gales, and then we'll go down here.
Well, I'm just wondering, will any of these contracts allow for the growth of any local area businesses? So will any DeKalb, Sycamore folks be able to take advantage of this opportunity?
Do you want Saul to take that? Yeah, Saul, I think we want you to take it, Vice President Jensen.
So I think the short answer is yes. This would enable us to go into an RFP process so that anyone across the state can bid.
I gotcha.
And then what we want to do is to have, again, up to three different vendors. And what we found by having just a single vendor is that they may specialize in one type of printing, for example, large mass quantities. And when it comes to smaller things like business cards or stationery, it ends up costing the university a lot more. And so that's why we want to have different vendors that with different specializations.
Do we have firms locally that could take on this kind of work?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yep.
We'll go down here. John Butler.
So we've had in the past discussions about printing contracts. Is this, because it says that organizational oversight of this contract has transitioned from the Division of Information Technology to EMMC. Does this continue the printing relationship that we acquired the last time we talked about this with, I forget what the company was, or is this going to be a brand new effort for the institution to have a new relationship with several printers for this particular unit?
John, I'm going to give it my best shot, and Saul can correct me where I'm wrong. So this is different than the Anywhere Print solution that we brought to the board kind of at the beginning of my tenure, which brings copiers to divisions and
No,
and
this was earlier than that. This was under your predecessor.
You mean the R.R. Donnelly?
Yes.
Yes, this actually replaces that. Maybe, Saul, you want to talk to that? Or
that's exactly it. So that's the contract that has expired. Mm-hmm. We still have, they're still doing work for us right now until we do the RFP and have these new vendors on board. But that's the transition that we are looking to make.
Okay, so I want to then remind everybody involved that printing is covered by the Prevailing Wage Act, and the services of printers is covered by that state law. And so I think it's important that as we think about vendor relationships, we get assurances from the vendors that we're working with that they're paying the prevailing wage for the services. That's the point I want to make on this, and I trust that everybody understands that. But the procurement code, which is mentioned here specifically, controls the way that the procurement takes place, but it doesn't control the way that the vendor pays their printers.
Excellent point. Thank you.
Are we done? Okay. Eric?
He is the board historian, so we get the full background on it. So I'm curious about this. We're doing three-year contracts. I get that for the software and the hardware. I understand it, but this is more services related. So we are able to lock in pricing over 3 years on this. So maybe it kind of adds on to what you're talking about, John. So, I mean, I think in the past we were doing one-year contracts. Now it seems like we're going more to three-year contracts for better pricing.
It'll give us a better pricing.
Yeah. I mean, we're all for that. But are there, since it is more services based, are there points where they can come back and say, yeah, we need a little more in a contract like this?
Typically, procurement may want to.
Yeah. So, Eric, once we sign the contract, that locks the vendor into that pricing.
Okay, so tough.
And so
prices go up tough.
That's why we enter into the multi-year contracts, right?
Right.
To be able to take advantage of those of those potential savings. It does sometimes.
Okay, I mean, hardware is hardware, software is software, but these are people. So,
John.
But we have to make sure they understand that it is important to the institution that the vendor follows the law, and they should understand that before they calculate their bids.
Yeah, I think that I'd say yes to all of that, John. And you know, the other part of that is that the vendor continues to meet the needs of the university, providing a quality service, right? I can share my experience with R.R. Dunley when I first got here. Carol's not here. This is good. So my first business cards came in, and I was the chief diversity officer, which is the worst possible position for me, right? So, we want to ensure that we have quality in the product that we're getting as well, and we hold the vendors to those standards.
Yeah, my only – just to be really clear, my point is the institution has to articulate to – the bidding vendors that there are laws that apply to this particular type of work, and that the institution is assuming that those vendors will be following those laws.
We cannot and would not issue an RFP before we got board approval. I think we've gotten clear direction from the board on conditions that need to be explicit in the RFP. So thank you, Trustee Butler.
But just so I'm clear, what I hear Trustee Butler saying is the burden on us as the university, or is the burden on the vendor?
The burden is on the vendor, but as the customer, based on the value systems of the institution and our belief in that our vendor should follow law, I think it's better to get out in front of that as opposed to find out after the fact that a violation has occurred and workers are finding themselves not making the legally required wages. So it's really about getting in front of the question before it becomes a kind of values issue for us.
Okay. We good? One last question, but just clarification, I think, for the board and for the public is that this and other items that we've approved today do not have a negative impact on the fiscal year 26 budget.
That's correct.
Thank you. Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. We've had discussion. All those in favor of item 8E, say aye.
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 Opposed? Agenda item 8E is passed. Okay, that is it for the action items that this committee needed to approve. We will move on to agenda item 9. George?
NIU board regulations stipulate that the university presents regular summaries of designated activities, including financial and property transactions, as well as confirmation that state and federal requirements are met. Today we have two items which include a presentation on the progress report of active capital projects and a written quarterly update on the transactions in excess of $250,000 for the period of April 1, 2025 through June 30, 2025, and are submitted in accordance with board regulations. I invite John Heckman, Associate Vice President for Facilities Management and Campus Services, to present the progress report. After AVP Heckman's presentation, I'm happy to answer any questions.
And I just want to add, because I know it's on the minds of everybody on the board, we will have some pictures of boilers in this presentation. So we can't have a presentation from John Heckman without a picture of a boiler.
You're right about that. Well, maybe on a lighter note, and thank you for that light introduction there, but good morning. And this brief is really intended to be a simple and mostly pictorial update on some of the major projects and interesting improvements, and I find interesting, and I hope you will too, around the campus from the past few months. Next slide, please. I structured the lineup today by starting with a quick update on our main state capital projects, including the two new construction projects and our active boiler project. This is then followed with updates on our other active construction efforts involving our energy improvements, roofing, and other miscellaneous efforts. Some of this might be visibly obvious as you may walk and drive around the campus, but I will also try to show some views of improvements not normally seen by the typical person on campus. Next slide, please. The Bossert-Bowell Health Technology Center has recently completed its schematic design stage, which fine-tunes the fit and configuration of the spaces before the detailed design development gets underway this fall. At this point, the project timeline could feasibly reach a groundbreaking milestone by fall of next year if final design and construction procurement efforts play out smartly. The significance of this is being able to complete the new building so utilization can align to the start of the spring semester in 2029. Later this fall, we're going to look to provide a more detailed update on this project as the detailed design development gets underway. Next slide, please. The Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability Project reached a significant milestone as well with the release of the request for proposals in July. We're hoping that this should put the project on track to begin work next summer and possibly complete in 2027. Next slide, please. Shifting to our state-funded boiler project, progress has remained steady, and we continue to track towards starting the new boilers in November for the final commissioning efforts. As a reminder, the two new boilers are sized to handle our regular maximum demand, but we will continue to need our existing boilers as backup until a subsequent project can add the necessary capacity to our new plant. Next slide. Turning to the $56 million of energy improvements with Trane. There has been good progress over the summer as compared to our last report. This project will continue through next summer, working in between weather events and campus operations as necessary. As of today, the Stevens Solar System is installed and going through final commissioning efforts, and the six DC fast chargers are now operational in the visitor lot. We still have to advertise it. We're doing some testing, but they are operational. Next slide, please. The lighting improvements in most cases are not that visible around campus, but the stadium lights should be clearly obvious on game days. The lights were given a little workout one evening, as you can see on the slide, to test the capabilities of the lighting control system. While not originally included in our budget, Trane donated this enhanced light control package to help with the entertainment potential for our Husky Stadium events. Next slide. A more visible part of the energy improvements are the thermal storage systems being installed at Barsima Hall, the Convocation Center, and the East Chiller Plant. Coupled with significant mechanical system improvements to the respective buildings, the ice to be made and stored in these 12-foot tanks represents about 50% of the maximum cooling load. Savings are obtained by making ice at night when the electrical costs are lower, and using the ice during the day to provide building cooling, thereby avoiding energy consumption when electrical prices are otherwise at a peak. Given how the tanks will be a clearly visible feature on at Barsima Hall and the East Chiller Plant along Garden Road, some thoughts are developing on how to best brand this billboard opportunity in some manner. Next slide. While I noted the Stevens roof a little earlier, the DuSable roof is currently underway, and I will note that this picture shows the framework installed on the roof, but as of yesterday, the solar panels are also installed. Chesick will follow soon after, and progress on the solar systems has slowed a little bit from our original schedule due to the necessary coordination with ComEd. Nonetheless, ComEd is getting very familiar with our efforts, and the remaining installations should proceed smoothly. As a reminder, the total system output for all these solar systems is estimated to offset about 6% of our overall campus consumption annually. Next slide, please. Our roofing projects continue to be a regular seasonal activity. The Swen Parson project, thankfully next door, is winding down, having completed both the roof replacement and the parapet repairs. The effort is now focused on the stone veneer on the central tower before being finally complete. DeSable received a new roof before the solar work began recently. Additionally, the ground level roof section at the Anderson Hall is currently in progress. And finally, I had hoped to state that we had the state-funded project for the music and gable roofs to be underway by now, but I will say, fortunately, that the bidding process through CDB is currently underway, and we hope to see this work potentially completed yet this fall if schedules play out well. Next slide. Some classroom updates. There we go. Some classroom updates were able to be executed over the summer involving 10 different Barsima Hall classrooms with a combination of IT and furniture improvements benefiting the College of Business. This effort was made possible through generous donations directed at the college. Additionally, the replaced furniture was able to be repurposed to other locations on campus, allowing this one investment to benefit a larger footprint. Next slide, please. Similar space upgrades were able to be performed earlier this year as the Gender and Sexuality Resource Center was relocated to the Peters Campus Life Building. The former home of the center in the Arndt House was facing a need for costly repairs, and an alternative was developed with the input of staff and students to consolidate the center with more modern space accommodations in the Campus Life Building. An open house event was held in April and showed how both the staff and students were really enjoying this new space. Next slide, please. The next few slides show more of a behind-the-curtain look that occurs to keep our buildings functioning. On the mechanical side, I wanted to show the inner workings of an elevator system. In this case, one of the towers at Stevenson. The effort involves repairs to the gearing system at the very top of the elevator shaft. We have repaired other aspects to this elevator system in past years with upgrades to controls, cable replacements, and cab modernizations. This repair in particular was challenging because the parts no longer are available in the market and had to be specifically manufactured just for us. Next slide, please. Staying with the Stevenson complex for a moment, but shifting to electrical systems, repairs continued to be made to this aging system dating back to the late 60s when this complex was constructed. These improvements involved updating control panels and switches and will allow for a more reliable system that at this date and age people generally take for granted and expect to always be available. Next slide, please. Finally, I wanted to show a couple city-funded efforts, with the main one being the Lucinda Normal intersection. As you may recall, the city determined that a roundabout intersection would work well with the amount of traffic experienced and with enhanced accommodations for our visually impaired students at the designated crosswalks. The intersection just reopened to traffic last week, and I'm sure local drivers have been adjusting quite quickly to the new intersection style. Additionally, I wanted to note that the city was able to fund a couple bus shelters, with one placed at Kishwaukee Drive near Engineering and the other pending placement at West Locust next to the parking garage. Next slide, please. And to end, I wanted to leave you with a couple photos demonstrating our continuing trend towards more electrification on campus. The solar benches, four on campus, were obtained at no cost and will generate some revenue through the electronic advertising displays. The benches provide not only additional outdoor seating, but also a source for powering cell phones. Additionally, as electric vehicles become more affordable and in styles that can meet our needs, we have been expanding their role on campus. In this case, maintenance vans have shown to be a good fit for our operations. With this, I hope you found this brief informative, and I will stand by for questions.
Clearly, you and your team have been busy. Sure. Questions from the board. Chair Gales.
First of all, I love the boilers. I mean, that was great. I wanted to see, what are we doing to, you talked about brand. I heard branding a little bit there when you were talking. And I couldn't help but think, wow, if we had charrettes or 3Ds or poster boards of the activities taking place on campus, and we're putting them out in the restaurants in the DeKalb area, or if we're doing something in the libraries, something to help build our, again, our brand. Because I believe all good PR starts within, as opposed to, you know, going out to Vegas or Nevada or whatever. Or do we do anything like that? Or
I understand what you're talking about, and we try. Given our staffing and how we're trying to balance budgets and all that, it is extra effort to pull that together. But as we, particularly as we get to the new construction efforts with the Bossert Bagwell Health Technology Center, there will be opportunities to take some of the renderings that come from the design efforts and see how can we advertise that, how we can market that and drum up some excitement on things. The more mundane things of elevator repairs, you know, do we put the effort into that? So I hear what you're saying, yeah. And we do try that. We work with marketing and communications and see what we can do to promote that.
Because, you know, the other thing is, how much of this does our student body know about that we're making these kind of improvements to their quality of life?
We do have a website information out there, and I won't say it's robust, but we do have some information about our projects out there, and we routinely work with the EMMC team to update that. But I get where you're going, and maybe we can do a few things on some special projects.
I may be telling on myself a bit, but I haven't been in the dorms in a long time, right? So do we have CTTVs or CLTVs, whatever, there, where we could run a loop of certain things that are taking place?
I would have to look at that. I'm not personally familiar with that.
We do have Jen Manning here if she wants to talk about electronic billboards and advertising in residence halls or in the Home Student Center.
Hi, I'm Jen Manning. I'm happy to answer any questions. Can you repeat that question again?
Well, we were talking about advertising out to the student body, right? And whether or not we had some sort of electronic vehicle in order to broadcast in the lobbies of the buildings, et cetera. Some of the things that are going on campus as well as these new...
Yep, we have digital monitors in all of the residence halls that we can push information out through our campus system. As well as we have those in the student center and some of the other buildings on campus. So we're trying to utilize our MarCom team and then our student organizations. They put information out as well, and so we have different channels that we can use within each building, and then also information that can go out to the whole campus. So it's a good way to get that information out in another way besides emails and some of those other things that we're doing.
And that's strictly on campus, right? It doesn't go outside.
As far as I know, it's strictly on campus.
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, the new benches that are going in, the electric benches that have the advertisement, can we utilize that at all?
That's a partnership with the vendor that provided those benches. So we'll have to see. I think there is an opportunity that we can put some of our NIU advertising in there, but we'll have to look at the, they're trying to raise revenue, and that's how everything works.
I can answer that for you, Trustee Athis. The answer is yes. If there's advertising space that is not being used, we have the ability to, for instance, we don't have to put this up, but in the next week or two, you'll start seeing advertising for homecoming. I'd rather have advertising sold and get the revenue for that, but yes, we have the ability to.
One of the things to Assistant Vice President Manning's point was that with the pieces inside the student center and the residence halls, we also work on particular campaigns at different times throughout the year to advertise that, like our Mission AI, how we utilize that, our mission system, the texting messages. One of the current things that we're advertising now is the 321 program. I'm going to ask that if Provost Ellis Piper has just defines that really quickly for us, but that's advertised throughout. Braven is advertised throughout, just so folks see current and relevant pieces.
The 321 focuses on new freshmen, not necessarily, you know, changes to campus, but it's a new initiative where there's three things we want them to do their first two semesters to help them get to their one goal, which is graduating. And it's enrollment and successful completion of their comms requirement, their English requirement, and the completion of 24 credit hours. We know when students do those three things, they're twice as likely to graduate than students who don't do those things. So that's one of the campaigns that we're doing to really try and focus freshmen students and their advisors and our faculty and staff to making sure that students are doing those things.
Further questions for John, Eric?
John, thanks. Exciting as always. You know, boilers, man. on slide four, I noticed on slide three you talked about a shovel in the ground, groundbreaking. Slide four, you do not for the next building. So is there, what do you think as far as us actually starting?
As you very well know, I mean, timelines are always guesses until we get to a more definitive award, and then you really can lay out a more definitive timeline. So right now, I think with NICS, I think there's a good chance for groundbreaking next calendar year in 26, and thereby completing in 27. So I think that's the feasible window that we should be able to look at. It could be. I mean, you're always working around the season when you're doing anything in the ground. So depending on how the procurement process works out, and this is a design build, so they have to do a little bit of preliminary design efforts before they can really start get up and running. So I'm hoping by sometime next spring they might be able to start Gray and Brown.
That's scary.
So our friends at the Capital Development Board are moving the paper from one side of the desk to the other a little bit faster these days then? Is that what's going on?
I might have to hold my thoughts on that a little bit, but we're always pushing them, if I can say it that way. Whatever their challenges are, you know, I'm sure they got them, and we're going to keep pushing for our own interests, and that's what we do.
Okay.
So
it's only about 8 to 9 years in coming. Paper takes a while.
Sure.
Thank you. Other questions or comments for John? John, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will move on to agenda item number 10. Are there any other matters that need to come before this committee today? Hearing none, the next meeting date of this committee will be November 13th of 2025. Is there a motion to adjourn today's meeting?
So made. Strum.
Thank you. Second? Thank you. Ms. Stowe, would you please call the roll to adjourn the meeting?
Trustee Rita Athes?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Trustee James Innes?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales?
Yes.
Committee Vice Chair Leland Strom?
Yes.
Committee Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes. Thank you. This concludes the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee. The special meeting of the Board of Trustees will begin immediately, Matt. Okay. It's pretty short agenda, so we will roll right into it. Thanks very much.